Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes.
My special guest today is Lieutenant Colonel Bobby Saxon, the Chief of the Department of the Army's Force Management Enterprise Division. Lieutenant Colonel Saxon, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me today.
Well, let's start with some basics. You are running the Enterprise Management Decision Support System. This is something that's a web-enabled system. Give us a sense of what it is, how it works, and why it's important.
EMDS, as we call it, Enterprise Management Decision Support, is a web-enabled CIPRNet-based system that pulls data from 18 authoritative data sources into a common access point in order to paint a holistic picture for units as they progress to the Orphogen cycle. And that's the Army Force Generation Cycle.
In terms of data, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about people? Are we talking about logistics?
We're talking about what we commonly refer to as cross-functional. We're looking at people data. We're looking at equipment data. We're looking at readiness. We're looking at installation data. And we're tying all that together so that when you go look at a division versus a brigade versus a battalion, you're able to see that picture in a very common way, but also in a holistic way. Typically, you'd have to go to, in some cases, four, five, six different systems in order to see the same data, but you're seeing that data in one place.
How's it presented? Is it in kind of a dashboard setup that's very common nowadays to hear about dashboards, or is it set up in a different way?
It is kind of a dashboard. It's a GUI interface that we bring this information in. Our real focus is on the end user, to allow them to see this information in a way that makes sense to them and to help paint a picture for them when they're looking at each individual unit. We're currently in the process of moving more to a dashboard approach and hope to launch that this summer.
So give me a sense. If I'm someone who's looking at readiness and I'm saying, okay, what division is ready maybe to ship out to Iraq or Afghanistan or somewhere else, what kind of information are they getting? What kind of data?
That information is actually pulled together by a different department within the Army G3. But we take that information from them, that readiness information, and they're basically taking a look at not only the people that you have on hand, but also the state of those people. What's their training? Do you have anyone that might be sick that can't deploy? That all plays into readiness, and that same approach applies when you're looking at your equipment. Not only do I have all of my equipment on hand, but all that equipment is actually functional and can be utilized to accomplish the mission.
Pulling from 18 different systems, that's crazy. I mean, it just seems like why not just have the one system with everything? Is that kind of where the thought process for EMDS, the Enterprise Management Decision Support System, came from? Is why do we have all these 18? Let's just have one? Or was there another issue of why this came about?
The foundation for EMDS goes back to 2005. The Department of the Undersecretary of the Army, the Business Transformation Office, was looking at the problem of lots of different data sources out there and a difficult way to be able to pull that data together and see that in a common way. That served as the foundation for the eventual launch of EMDS and the development of EMDS. There are several thousand systems in the Army inventory right now. Our system does not create any new data. We take data from multiple sources and we make it simpler for people to be able to utilize that as information as opposed to data. And then we apply business intelligence tools to that to help look at some scenarios out in the future. So we're able to look at rotational rates for units, for example, into FY 15, 16, 17, and 18.
I think that's key, is the business intelligence piece, because there's so much data out there. Okay, what does it mean? How did you apply the business intelligence? Is it just writing the algorithms to say, here's what the end result we're trying to get to? How do we pull data from each of the baskets, or what?
It's actually been a combination of all of that. We've worked with the individual data owners. We call them authoritative data sources. We pull that authoritative data from the individual data owners, and then we bring it into our system, the foundation of which is an Oracle database, and then we use the Oracle Business Intelligence tool on top of that to apply certain sets of business rules depending on what we're trying to look at, whether it be the current picture or a future picture out there.
Let's talk a little bit about the impact of the system, because EMDS sounds like this is something that should have been in place, if you will, before the beginning of the global war on terror, because as things built up. But it seems like this came about during the global war on terror. How did it come about, and what's the impact been on the Army?
Well, obviously, the Army is looking at data totally different now than we looked at it a little over 10 years ago, prior to the 9/11. What we have tried to do with our system is to take these disparate data sources, bring that into a central place, paint a picture that allows not only a personnel person or an equipment person or a readiness person, but leaders, senior leaders, and commanders to be able to look at this information and then make decisions off of that information. In addition to just simply helping with the decision-making process, we've also helped with some of the just simple access to data. Many times I talked to some of our users, and previously they had to literally remember dozens of websites to go to and usernames and passwords to be able to get access to that actual information. And then they had to go into the system and pull that information out and then try to figure out how to marry up different pieces of information to be able to look at multiple units the same way.
This EMDS has been in place for how long, roughly?
EMDS, actually, we started development back in 2008. The foundation, the concept, goes back a couple years prior to that, but actual development began in the spring of 2008.
And it moved to production in just recently?
We moved to production about a year ago. We are constantly evolving as a system now. As soon as we hit production back in December of 2010, we picked up two additional missions to add additional capabilities to our system.
And in the year, give me a sense of the impact it's had. Give me a sense of how it's helped the Army in the last year versus maybe it took 2 weeks to do this, now it takes 2 hours.
In the last year, we have continued our evolution from a system that started out trying to solve a problem to actually getting out there and solving those problems on behalf of the Army. An example of what we have been able to do is there was a process called the Force Validation Committee process, but it was just a process that brought a lot of different people together from across the Department of the Army, typically 30, 40, 50 action officers working on trying to create the output. And what we were able to do was take that process, which typically took 30, 40, 50 action officers, down to just a few people to be able to output the same exact information and do it in about one-tenth of the time.
That's excellent. I mean, the idea to not only free up those 35, 40 people to do their regular jobs, but also to do it in less time. What's that mean for the Army in a broader sense of force readiness and equipment readiness and logistics?
Well, a key point you said there was to free up people to do their regular jobs. As you know, in the last 10 years, a lot of different missions have been created, not only for the warfighters that are in theater, but also for the people in the building that are trying to pull information together on a regular basis. What we have done in this particular case is we've given them back time to go do their regular jobs more efficiently. But we also believe as we continue to evolve that we'll be able to do things that typically had taken several to dozens of people to be able to accomplish. And what that may help the Army with as you look out into the future is as the Army downsizes, not only in uniform, but also potentially in the civilian workforce, that we'll be able to accomplish things with EMDS that had previously taken multiple individuals to accomplish.
All right, well, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about EMDS. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Lieutenant Colonel Bobby Saxon, the Chief of the Department of the Army's Force Management Enterprise Division.
This heavyweight bout is about to begin. The challenger wears white trunks with a blue stripe, and the champ is wearing, looks like an examination gown from the doctor's office. And from the back, we can... Ooh, that's not pretty. Champ, what's with the crazy getup?
I've got to take care of my family.
Yeah, so?
When you love your family, you got to go in and get those important medical screens. A lot of potentially deadly diseases can be treated if you catch them in time.
So you wear the examination gown because...
Because I'm a real man. Real men take care of their families and get those tests. Real men wear gowns.
Okay, champ, good luck. Here we go. The champ's not wasting any time. Oh, it's over. This fight is over. Champ, you barely broke a sweat. Any words for your fans out there?
Remember, go to ahrq.gov for a list of the tests they need to get and when to get them.
What was that web address again?
ahrq.gov. And remember, real men wear gowns.
Go to ahrq.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AHRQ, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Lieutenant Colonel Bobby Saxon, the Chief of the Department of the Army's Force Management Enterprise Division. Now, Bobby, before break, we're talking a lot about the Enterprise Management Decision Support System, EMDS. And one of the things that was always interesting is how did that get developed? Was this something, again, that your office contracted for? I know you mentioned you're using Oracle Database, Oracle Business Intelligence. And talk about the cost. There's a lot of development, a lot of implementation, a lot of maintenance. Give me a sense of the process by which this was developed.
EMDS system has primarily been developed with contract labor, and we've utilized several companies throughout the last 3 years. We've utilized KPMG early on in the process in order to help us do some of the original studies and develop some of our original requirements documentation. We also utilized Oracle, as I mentioned earlier, and we use a small company called ERPI, which has helped us a lot with our program management and with helping us look forward as well as manage this program in the proper way according to the CIO standards out there. We are currently also working with Booz Allen Hamilton, which is doing quite a bit of our development workforce at this time.
The systems in development production is being used. There's other capabilities, which we'll get to in a second. It's not quite in the O&M phase, operations and maintenance. It's still in the development modernization phase, or is it a little bit of both?
It is a little bit of both. For our initial deliverable, which, as I mentioned earlier, we became FOC, fully operational capability, back in December of 2010. We're in a maintenance and sustainment for that particular deliverable. However, we are currently working with the Army G357 to develop some additional capabilities within the system, and basically that will entail bringing in some additional sources of data, a lot more readiness-related information, and working very closely with the operations director within the Army G3. We are going to present that data so that more end users can have access to it. We also recently started some early requirements gathering, and we'll soon go into development for the Army's Global Force Management Data Initiative. The Army stood up, or is in the process of completing standing up, the Army Org Server, which is taking all the force structure data for the Army, brought it into one place, and it's put it in a joint format. And this was an initiative that began many years ago by General Cartwright, and the joint staff has driven this. And this particular initiative, the Force Management Division, or correction, Directorate of the Army G3, has done a tremendous amount of work for it. We're going to utilize EMDS, in order to share that information with the joint community. And that's really an FY12, FY13 effort that we're going to be doing.
I want to talk more about the bigger data initiatives that Army's doing. But before I get there, let me just ask the roughly the cost of the system. Obviously, contractors cost money. How much do the Army end up spending?
We're averaging about $5 million a year on our efforts with EMDS. This year, a little bit more than that, because we've got sustainment costs and development costs this year.
That's not bad. I mean, when you think about big systems and pulling from so many different data sources, $5 million a year, that for the Army, that's a rounding error sometimes.
Well, it may be a rounding area, but we're very particular about how we spend the money. As you know, the environment has changed, and cutting cost, controlling cost, and being very wise about how you utilize your funds is the way to move forward. And we've been very, very careful about that. And we're actually trying to reduce our footprint. Some of the development work that we're doing now is geared more towards the back-end automation pieces, so that down the road we'll need less contract labor in order to maintain the system.
Did your staff have a role in the development of this? Meaning, do you have application coders, if you will, playing a part of this? Or did you guys do the more typical government role, which is oversight of the contractors, developing the requirements, making sure they're meeting certain milestones?
More typical government role of overseeing the contractors. Our team is about 30 people total, and I only have a couple of government on the team. Myself is the only Army person on the team, and I have a couple of government GS employees. And then the rest is contract.
Talk about the challenges in developing this system, because this doesn't, you know, pulling data from so many disparate sources, 18 you mentioned early on, that doesn't, and then you have data standards issues, and how do you, you know, one person calls a boat, and you call it a speedboat. I mean, how do you balance that? Was there a lot of, obviously, upfront work to get ready to develop the system, but was that the biggest challenge, was the data, or was there something else?
Well, the biggest challenge was and still is the data, and then understanding the data, because we like to take that data and turn it into information. 18 different data sources, almost 18 different ways of looking at their data, 18 different ways of creating their databases, and 18 different ways of sharing that data. The Army has gone through for the last couple of years and is picking up momentum on how we standardize data and how we share data. But when we first started this process, it was really quite painful, as a matter of fact. And we still work through challenges on a daily basis now. Our goal going forward is to get that data developed, work with our source owners as they change their systems, help them change their systems so that they have web services available. So it's really machine to machine, and we can take the individuals out of that data sharing process. Then once we get it into the system, it's all about understanding their business rules. Many times you can look at raw data, and depending on your particular point of view, that data means a different thing to you. And what we're trying to do is, in this common access point of EMDS, paint a holistic picture so that someone who has personnel experience goes and looks at the system. Not only do they understand it, but someone who may have little to no personnel experience can go look at the information. Same thing with the readiness, same thing with our equipment information as well.
Was the first few years while you were developing this and coming, pulling the requirements together, all of that data standardization, was that what you did kind of early on?
That's what the system and the program has done. I've only been on the program for about a year now. Colonel Deb Malone, now retired, led the program for many years and led that charge there. We also were very fortunate that we had a lot of higher oversight and folks who helped us get through some of the early challenges out there.
Currently, as you guys pull data, is it coming in, for instance, as an XML file? Is it coming in as a different type of file?
Yes.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we still get data in just about every data format that you can imagine out there. It's a dual-edged sword. We get that data regardless of the source of the data or the type or the format of the data, and we bring it into our system. And we feel we're bringing a great service to the Army, because if you were someone who had a challenge and you needed to go seek data, you'd literally have to go get that sometimes in text files, XML files, Excel spreadsheets, databases, web services, and just to get your hands on the data. What we're doing is we're doing that real hard work there, some of it still manually intensive, to then put it in a web-enabled interface that more users can get access to and then utilize that information.
How do you deal with if someone sends you a text file versus someone sends you an Excel spreadsheet? You have someone who basically manually enters data? Is that what you're doing?
Well, we're past the point of having to manually enter any data, and we have continued to automate our processes so we can absorb data in lots of different formats now and utilize different software tools to take that data, extract it, transform it, load it into our Oracle database.
How do you double-check, make sure that, one, the tools are doing what they're supposed to do, and, two, there's no dirty data?
Well, actually, we have an automated process that, and again, this has evolved over time, because there was an assumption initially that we were getting data that was good data. And through no fault of any one individual, sometimes that data would come in and it wouldn't be as clean as we thought it was, or we would misunderstand or misinterpret the way that the data should be applied. But over time, we've evolved now that we've put in automated processes to not only open the data, verify the data, and then confirm that the data has been loaded, is being utilized correctly. And we get, obviously, nightly reports when that data gets loaded on whether we had good data or not. And if we ended up getting bad data, we may go back to the source provider and ask them to give us a new load on their data.
Because I think that's the biggest challenge a lot of agencies are facing. When I talk to CIOs all the time, they say, you know, when they go back to the data, how do you make sure it's good data, it's clean data? I mean, if you think about the work that this administration has done around, for instance, data.gov, or if you think about open government, there's that whole push and pull between clean data and dirty data and data that's in good shape. Did you have some issues around that when you first started? I know you've only, as you said, you've only been around a year, but from a program perspective, was there kind of some concern about pushing, letting EMDS out, that people use it before that you knew that data was as good as it could be?
Most certainly there was. As a matter of fact, we've done a lot of work that has helped move the ball forward on behalf of the Army, because previously what you would typically see, and you still see this in some cases, is you'll have a request for information. That request for information to go to whoever the data owner is, they know the condition of their data, so they then take that data, they put it out to a PowerPoint presentation, and then they present the data they want the way they want that data presented. And that has proven to be quite effective. But when you move into this type of environment where we're saying, give us your raw data, let us utilize that to paint this new picture out there, it has forced data quality or the inability to share data correctly to improve. And we've seen that with our, with many of our data providers, and we're seeing that as an ongoing process. And we think that in the near term that we'll still be working through that. But we definitely see that it's getting better, that data owners are looking at their data very differently now, and they know that that data eventually is going to be available to the entire Army. And so their standards have been raised as a result of that.
All right, well, let's come back and talk more about some data, some big data initiatives going on through the Army. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Lieutenant Colonel Bobby Saxon, the Chief of the Department of Army's Force Management Enterprise Division.
Excuse me, do you know how to get to Maine and Maple?
Do you have these in a 7.5?
How's that cooked?
Can I get that shipped overnight?
Is there a direct flight?
How long does the warranty last?
What's your soup of the day? How do you change the ringtone?
Does it come in blue?
Does this bus stop at Elm Street?
We ask questions everywhere in life.
Is it raining out?
What time's the meeting?
How much does this cost?
Does it have four-wheel drive?
Have we met before?
What's my account balance?
Yet somehow, when we get to the doctor's office...
Any questions?
No.
We clam up. Ask questions.
What is this test for?
Are there any side effects?
When do I get my results?
Questions lead to better health care. Go to ahrq.gov for a list of 10 questions everyone should know. Questions are the answer. Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Lieutenant Colonel Bobby Saxon, the Chief of the Department of the Army's Force Management Enterprise Division. Now, Bobby, before break, we're talking a lot about data and data quality. Now, the Army has some big data initiatives that they're working on, and I want to get into that in a second, but data quality is something that kind of occurred to me. How do you assure that? Because that's so important. We were talking a little bit about it. Give me a sense of how you guys are really making sure it works for you guys.
Well, Jason, in addition to a lot of the automated processes that we put in place to confirm the data is indeed good data, clean data, we also have a small testing team that looks at it from the end user's point of view. Did we indeed bring that data in correctly and then present that data and paint the correct picture so that the end users have access to information that indeed helps them make good decisions?
This testing team, is it made up of end users or is it made up of former mission people in those areas that you guys have brought in?
It's actually a combination. We have a small contract team that forms the foundation for that, but we also regularly bring in end users as a part of our testing, and those end users are folks that work every single day with that data, either as a source data or those action officers that previously had to do a lot of that manually.
What's the response been from those end users? I mean, do you get Christmas cards and, you know, thank you so much letters?
The response has been positive, first of all, and it's growing. Initially, there were a lot of folks that weren't quite sure because they knew how complicated this was. And as we've grown in our understanding of how to present this data and how to bring all this data into one place, the confidence and the accolades that we're getting from our end users have continued to grow. And we expect as we continue our development throughout this year with the work that we're doing with the Army G3, that we'll see more and more momentum built.
Has there been complaints as people come to you and say, well, it's not doing what I quite needed to do, or, you know, the presentation layer doesn't work for me. Have you gotten that too?
We get constant feedback from our users out there. I wouldn't voice them as complaints. I would voice them as good, lively feedback. Data owners are very particular about their data, and so it's important that we get it right in how we present their data out there. We have an open policy welcoming feedback. We take that feedback as constructive feedback, and then we try to make the system better. Because at the end of the day, our goal is to make sure that this data is turned into information that can be utilized to make decisions with.
We've been talking a lot about the EMDS, Enterprise Management Decision Support System. Give me a sense of how this fits in more broadly to the Army's data initiatives. I know data is so important. You can't hear enough about how important the data is.
Well, a lot of the buzz terms that you've heard in the last few years about cloud-based, for example, we bring this data in sometimes from very stovepipe systems that are running on a local machine in someone's office, maybe an Excel spreadsheet in someone's office. We bring that into the SIPR environment, but we bring it into that environment, make it web-enabled to give more people across the world access to this information. And we're utilizing as much cloud technology as possible so that we can expand if necessary as we bring in more data sources and bring in more users out there. In addition to that, we're very focused on COTS technology, commercial off-the-shelf technology. We do some custom programming, but where possible, we utilize good commercial technology as the foundation for what we're doing. One product that we're evaluating right now and we'll probably soon implement is a company called Endeca. You might not have ever heard of Endeca, but if you've ever been to the Home Depot or the Walmart website, you've seen their product in action. And what this does is it gives us the ability to expose more data, to use tagging technology, for example, to make it easier for people to kind of have almost a free-thinking thought as they go explore and utilize the data. We're also very focused on the DoD's net-centric data strategy and the basic concepts of making data visible, accessible, understandable, trusted. We live that as our creed on a daily basis. A
couple of things you brought up, cloud, I'm going to jump back to. Obviously, this is on the CIPRNet, so this is sensitive data. The system is being run, if you will, in a private cloud. Is it run by DISA, run by the Army?
It is actually running in a private cloud, as you mentioned. Currently, we're utilizing the Army Data Center at Fairfield out in California. We're in a process of making a move to Altus so that we can it'll be a little closer to us, but also give us more expansion capability. The Army Data Center out in Fairfield is very NIPR focused, unclassified focused, but they have a small classified cloud out there. But it has not, we're growing past it, so we're moving to a new location.
Well, we are almost out of time. Before I let you go, I want to get a little bit about your background. I mean, you've been very generous talking about the system. How did you get into developing the system? Is this something you've done before? And you've only been with your office for about a year. Where else have you worked with in the Army?
I am a Georgia boy, Georgia Army National Guardsman on the Title 10 tour. Serving my country. When 9/11 happened, I had been out of the military for 11 years. And that time when I was out of the military, I actually worked quite extensively developing software systems for small to mid-sized commercial entities and primarily focused around databasing and collaborative type of systems. Came back into the National Guard right after 9/11. Ended up doing a tour in Iraq and a couple of other different types of assignments. Came here to the Pentagon a little over 3 years ago on a Title 10 tour and initially worked in the Army G3 CIO office. Got my CIO certificate over at National Defense University and took over as the division chief for FME about a year ago.
Just in case people aren't familiar, Title 10 tour, what's that mean?
An active duty tour. I'm a National Guardsman that is on an active duty tour as opposed to 1 week in a month and then mobilizations and things of that nature.
All right, very nice. My special guest this week has been Lieutenant Colonel Bobby Saxon, the chief of the Department of the Army's Force Management Enterprise Division. I'm Jason Miller, your host. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Lieutenant Colonel Saxon, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks again.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news. Now,